A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I hate the way that you walk, the way that you talk, the way that you dress. It's VGC, the video game podcast, with me, Jordan Midler, and Chris Scullion. This week, Xbox shutters several studios, and in the second half of the show, we'll be joined by Chris Dring to talk all about it. But first, how are we doing, folks? Chris, how are you?
Doing good. What was the reference there? Was that a Taylor Swift one, or was that something else?
No,
slightly rang a bell, and I'm not sure why.
Have you seen this Kendrick Lamar and Drake beef?
I've heard about it. Is it part of that? I lost track. After the first two songs came out, everyone on Twitter was just talking about Kendrick and Drake and all the kind of, oh, he said this, he said that. And I said, I've not even heard the songs yet. I've not got a lyric sheet anywhere. And then when just more and more songs appeared, I just said, I'm sold now. I lost track. I missed the days of Eminem and the Insane Clown Posse releasing diss tracks. I could kind of keep track back in those days, but not anymore.
You weren't sent an official breakdown of all the different...
I didn't get the press release.
I mean, in my opinion, Kendrick really set the bar when one of his lyrics towards Drake was certified lover boy, certified pedophile. You really don't get any harder than that.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, they're lucky they don't live in the United Kingdom, because we've got rather stringent libel laws, which I'm sure if you can't prove that in the UK, that's a dodgy business. But I'm thinking America, you can say a bit more.
You'll appreciate this wordplay, because it's almost a magazine headline style line. Trying to strike a chord, and it's probably A minor. Come on. That's getting the mag.
That's true. I mean, probably wouldn't get an official Nintendo magazine, but getting A mag.
Oh, that's any juices?
I've got a drink review for you.
Oh ho, let's do it.
This was a belated birthday present from my brother, because me and my brother loved horror movies for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I've never dabbled with this brand in the past, but he's given me a limited edition Friday the 13th themed G Fuel.
Nice.
Which could well be, I don't usually dabble with the zero sugar stuff either. So it's just going to be pure chemicals. So I've got zero idea what Jason Voorhees tastes like.
Mm. Do we have any preamble on the can? Is it
nothing.
Made for
I can't actually find anything distributed by G Fuel. That's about as far as it goes, but it's hack and slash flavor, naturally and artificially flavored. Which doesn't really make sense. And
it's I'm expecting some kind of red berry to evoke blood.
Well, see, I don't even know what colour it is. It's your usual G Fuel blurb on the side. So you've got game-changing energy, mm-hmm. focus, endurance, immunity, and mood. 140 milligrams of caffeine, no calories, no sugar, no artificial colours. So, and apparently it fuels your gaming, fitness, work, and lifestyle.
I believe in that.
The quartfecta, I believe.
I have tasted the Tetris edition of this, and it was it tasted like telestatic. So
I've got zero hopes for this. So it's probably gonna be a one sip, and then I'll put the rest in the sink. But
okay, let's do it. Let's get it cracked.
So here's the open.
Nice. Standard.
And the colour is, I'm trying to get the colour. It's clear.
Oh god!
So that's a bad sign now.
It's plasma.
Okay. I'm just going to have a large drink of it, because that's the only way.
A large drink, of hack and slash G Fuel. Oh, he's not vomited over his mic yet. How are we feeling immediately after the drink?
There's a mild lemon lime threat to it.
Oh, okay.
And now the aftertaste kicking in. It's just pure chemicals.
Nice. It's like
a Friday the 13th movie, in that there's a period where you think the victim is safe for a while, and then suddenly, bah! Like you get hit with the gruesome bit at the end.
That's genius.
Yeah,
I want them to do a Tetris effect drink where after like a couple of sips you realise it's laced with acid and you're just you're absolutely pinging off your nut. I don't have a, I just have a Monster Ultra Black this week, which I don't really love. It's okay. It is like a red berry kind of thing, but it's so tart, like it makes my cheeks hurt. But, I meant to review this Rockstar Zero Strawberry Lime this week, but I already drank it, so.
Oh well. Can't live anyway, in the past. We can't live in the past.
That's it for this week's Energy Drink Podcast. We've got a couple of bits of news. Obviously, we're not going to touch the Xbox news until we have Dringo, so we don't say something stupid. We have a couple.
The other thing with that is awkwardly, I was telling you off air, off mic, as the kids say, a little peek behind the curtains, that my parents are zooming down the motorway towards my house as we speak because I'm working the late shift tonight and my wife's away at work too, so my parents are coming to watch my daughter when I pick her up from school. And in classic parent way, when you say, can you be here after 2 o'clock because I'm doing a podcast, they leave at 1:45, so they'll be here like in 20 minutes basically. So basically when Chris Trine turns up, I'm probably going to bow out because otherwise it's just going to be a massively awkward podcast with me trying not to swear. My parents are sitting just off camera, so probably best for everyone concerned.
And of course, we have a one Chris policy, so we couldn't exactly have both of you on here.
And you don't want to see a man like me reduced to tears while talking about Xbox, so it's probably for the best.
Oh, crying into your custom controller. Exactly. We've got a couple of bits of Nintendo news, but first, since Chris and I are the only ones here, no one can stop us. Chris, what do you think of Sandman Gate? So for those
I just saw the trailer and was happy enough with it. Is there a gate involved?
There is a gate. For those unaware, Sandman, is whose real name is Hack, because I watched the Dark Side of the Ring documentary on him, is returning to the WWE franchise after being absent since SmackDown vs. Raw 2009. He will be added to the game on the 15th of May alongside the Dudley Boys, Sabu, and CM fucking Punk. So they've started releasing entrances for these characters. Sandman's entrance, I think he looks great. Like, I think the character model looks fantastic. He looks a bit lean, but, you know, there's two issues here. One, he doesn't come through the crowd, which was kind of the... If you weren't an ECW fan or haven't seen anything like this, Sandman was this guy. His entire gimmick was he couldn't really wrestle, but he was like a bar fighter, and he'd come into the ring, he'd smash a can of beer over his head, so he'd be bleeding already on the way into the ring. The other famous part of his entrance is that he would enter to Metallica's Enter Sandman. You may be wondering, how did Paul Heyman afford the rights to Metallica's Enter Sandman in the mid-90s? That's the fun part. He didn't pay for Metallica, he didn't pay for Pearl Jam, he didn't play for Nirvana, he just did it. And as such, in the appearances of the Sandman in WWE since then, he's only ever used Enter Sandman once, which was the ECW One Night Stand, and in all recorded versions of that, it's changed to some generic...
Like when WCW used to do fake music.
Yeah. Oh, I love the WCW fake music. The version of It Smells Like Teen Spirit, which should be like... Dan, 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 tic, tic, dan, dan, instead it's like... but people are furious now that in WWE 2K24, the Sandman enters to his WWE theme, and 2K have not paid, presumably, millions for the rights to enter Sandman. Chris, how do you feel about this?
I don't care. I saw the trailer. I was like, that's good. The only thing I thought is just, it's a shame it doesn't come through the crowd, but as I understand it, nobody comes through the crowd just now in WWE games, which is, you can argue, is a bit of laziness on the developer's part to add that, because I'm sure it's happened in the past. I'm sure
they had the Shield entrance for
Shield ages. Used to do it, and Edge used to do it for a while. But to be fair, that was like WWF Attitude era, where they would literally just show you the outside of the ring, and he would just hop over the barrier. You wouldn't actually see him coming through the crowd through all the cardboard people. So yeah, that's slightly shame. The thing that disappointed me most, and I'm hoping it's just because by default this is turned off, and as all people of all ages are watching the Instagram. Where the video was posted, I'd like to see him bleed when he hits himself with a can, and I'm hoping when you turn the blood on, which isn't on by default, that just happens during the entrance, so that he starts the match bleeding. That's something that's the thing I'm more interested in, because I wasn't expecting Enter Sandman, and I was 50-50 on whether he'd come in through the crowd. It's the bleeding with the can that I want to see.
I agree. Yeah. I wonder if they won't do that, because that would break First Blood matches. And they're like, oh, let's just not bother with
that's
it.
True. That's a good point.
As soon as you get in the ring, ding, 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 that's it. But yeah, the people, I know it's slightly different because RVD, Rob Van Dam, for those not aware, his WWE theme is quite iconic, the one of a kind. Mm. But no one was moaning when they didn't get Pantera's walk for him. Like, it's, yeah. I know Sandman's entire thing is basically an entrance, but don't you know anything about Metallica? Like, yeah,
of all the people, of all the music to license, it's very much the 90s equivalent of Grado not coming out to Madonna. But yeah, it was like, it's even if, I bet if they asked, Metallica would say no, because you'd screwed us so many times in the past. And yeah, they're petty enough to say, were you not the ones who used Enter Sandman in the past? Chase yourself. So yeah,
it would have cost a fortune. Like, no, that was Todd Gordon.
But yeah, like you say, it would have cost an absolute fortune, and not everyone's going to buy the DLC, so you'd probably lose all your DLC profits just putting the music in it.
Yeah.
So, no.
Just wait until Punk doesn't have Cult of Personality. Then I'll care. Then I'll be angry. Oh, by the way, any luck? Nah. Single tickets for Clash? No, not
as soon
happening.
As I saw it, it was like, the best tickets they could find me was like £280 or something for a single night. I'm like, nah, not if I'm buying three or four. I'm not dropping nearly a grand on SmackDown with the greatest respect. But yeah, no luck.
Fair enough.
I've got one kind of lead that's kind of trying to get me tickets, but if that falls through, then I'll just have to watch it in the house, but we'll see.
We'll see what we can do. No one else will end up getting a wrestler on this podcast and still not getting onto the
show itself. Well, no, it's the way 2K does it. They'll fly over press from America to go and see it. just ignore us.
Well, that's shagged. Anyway, story number one. Nintendo has given the strongest indication that the next Switch won't be too far away from existing hardware. Your man, Furukawa. This is Furukawa.
The shunt.
This week, we all awoke to Furukawa drunk tweeting that they're going to acknowledge the Nintendo Switch in the next financial year. The Nintendo Switch 2, they've been acknowledging the Nintendo Switch for some time. There's also going to be a direct in June where they won't chat about Switch 2. However, when asked on a call related to these financial earnings, what will it be like, this second console? Is it going to have controllers? Is it going to be entirely motion-based? Is it going to be an AI cloud? Furukawa leaned into the mic and went, here, Switch next model is the appropriate way to describe it. Mm. So, Chris, between this and the magnetic Joy-Con things, nicer Switch in it?
Sounds that way. I'm happy with that. Literally, I'm just waiting for the backwards compatibility confirmation, and then I'll be in 2 footed studs up on day one to buy 8 of them. I just want the confirmation that actually we're going to do what Xbox did. One of the good things Xbox did, and carry your entire library over to the next.
Oh, wait! I can feel he's in the room with me. This is Furukawa. The Nintendo Switch 2 will not be backwards compatible.
Been shunted by the Shuntaro. How could you do this to his boy?
Shuntaro
Furukawa.
Shuntaro Furukawa, you fucking dobo. Shout out if you understand that reference.
That's a deep dive. Sorry, Dad. Obviously, even if it's not backwards compatible, I'm still going to get it, but I'll be disappointed that I'll have to keep my Switch around to play that stuff. I was hoping to pass the Switch down to my daughter in a kind of family tradition.
You never thought about getting her... What's the age where you get her one of those lights? Because I had one of those lights for a while. They're really nice and they're durable. It feels like you could like leather it off something and it wouldn't break.
Probably just launch it off a wall. But I don't know. She prefers playing on the telly for some reason.
Good proper game.
I don't know if it's because I've got the OLED, and the OLED's quite heavy for her. Yeah. It's just quite uncomfortable for her to play, and she prefers using sticks rather than D-pad, which is kind of heartbreaking as a parent watching. But I just go with it just because I'm happy she's playing at all. But yeah, it's like, so I think she's more comfortable playing it on TV just now, so whatever. But yeah, I've not looked into getting a light, but we'll see. If this is backwards compatible, then she can just get the OLED and lump it. Bye.
If they're going to chat about it,
here we go. Yeah.
Let's need to take a break.
They'll let themselves in. It's fine.
All right. Okay.
Should do. Hold on.
That's Furukawa. He's here. He's got the Nintendo Switch too.
I'll go and check. It might actually be them.
Okay. This is Jordan Midler. I'm here myself. I think that if they're going to talk about this in the next financial year, which lasts to next March, maybe they do the same thing they did with the Switch, where they get everyone together to do like a reveal in the January. Then they let people play it in like the in New York. And...
it wasn't actually them.
Oh, it's not. It's... Oh my God, is this what I think it is?
It was. It wasn't the ghost. I'm trying to cover my address here. Rather topically. It's a parcel from the Xbox gear shop because I bought a load of Xbox t-shirts minutes before they ripped the arse out of half their studios.
If you'd only bought more t-shirts, then maybe we wouldn't have to talk about this month.
Do a live opening.
Yeah, do a live
opening. A live review of Xbox.
I was basically just saying I think they'll reveal it in January and it will come out kind of springish.
I think this is actually only part of the order. So this is only the socks, I believe, which is less. Oh no, there's a...
I was about to say, how big are your fucking feet if that's just
two
the
t-shirts?
Socks?
Two t-shirts.
Here we go. Power your dreams.
We've got the. We have the Xbox logo Battletoads t-shirt.
Okay. Pull the mic closer to you. I think you knocked it.
Oh, sorry. We have a Battletoads t-shirt.
Uh huh. That's nice.
It's actually
name the Battletoads. What are they called?
Zits, Ration, Zits, Rash, and Pimple. I think you find there's only three. Then they also have another standard kind of X. There's a brand they've got now, which is this Xbox ball, and then with a design on it to make it look like a different game. So that was a Battletoads one. Very subtle. Less subtle is the Halo one. Which is basically the Xbox ball with a cheeky wee 117 on it.
117.
117. So there we go. So that's
the number of people. That's the number of studios they're going to close.
So
this
straight
week,
to the charity shop.
Wear those out and about, and then it's on site. You're going to get battled.
But anyway, yes, that's. I'll still wear them. I mean, I'm obviously not going to be around when the Xbox chat starts, but like.
You say that as if you're going to be murdered halfway through the show. I won't be here, don't worry about it.
I'm going to be knifed. But yeah, it's really disappointing. Like it's, I've probably mentioned in the past that of the two consoles, this generation Xbox is the one I kind of lean more towards, just in terms of a UI thing. Like if we get
and you famously got 500 Xbox games, like
well, exactly. It's the whole thing about carrying your library over. Like I was big on 360 and then moved to Xbox One. So when I moved over, like that's the one I play more because my library's bigger on Xbox because the achievements and stuff. So I just prefer the UI on Xbox. I've not got any kind of fanboy love for them. I've still got my PS5 and my Switch, obviously, and I love them all like, equally, like they were my own children. But I just prefer the Xbox UI and stuff like smart delivery and stuff. So it's really disappointing that this is, we've spoken in the past about how they constantly shoot themselves in the foot. It's just, it seems to be this generation is about which of the two companies can make the biggest arse of themselves because they've both done stupid things, but this is probably the daftest of the lot, shutting down. Like the Arcane one hurts, but you can kind of get it because Redfall was a disaster. So it's a shame, but we've seen that happen in the past. The Tango one is just pure madness.
Yeah. In a week where this podcast should be laughing at Sony for the PC integration thing, it's been completely bumped off the schedule because of all this.
That's
stuff.
What I tweeted. It was like, do you remember 400 years ago when people were like, "This is a bad look for Sony." This Helldivers, and everyone's just like, "What?" Forget Helldivers.
Yeah. Anyway, while we've still got you, this is the most Chris Scullion news of the generation,
mate. I know you're going to say.
Nintendo's officially announced Nintendo World Championship NES Edition. The Switch game will be released in July and cost £30. It features 150 speedrunning challenges divided across 13 games. Balloon Fight, Donkey Kong, Excitebike, Ice Climber, Kid Icarus, Kirby's Adventure, Metroid, Super Mario Bros. 1, 2, 3, Super Mario Bros. The Lost Levels, The Legend of Zelda, Zelda 2, Adventure of Link. Chris Gullion, take it away.
Well, I'll because I don't have a lot of time, I'm going to skip the egregious pronunciation of the word bros. But they, I'm delighted. I'm absolutely delighted about this because the trademark was kind of, not the trademark, so the ESRB rated it a couple of days ago. And people were like, what is this? And some people were like, oh, they're going to re-release the official World Championships cartridge from the 90s on Switch Online. And I was like, they won't do that because it'll be a nerdy fact there. Rad Racer was one of the games of those three things. I believe Square owned that. But this appears to be like a kind of NES Remix 3 type situation, but specifically, although NES Remix was as well, focused on speedrunning. So there'll be basically across these 13 games, there'll be different challenges. So Mario, the examples they gave was getting the mushroom at the start of the game. How quickly can you do it? And there'll be grades, so rank A and A plus and all this kind of stuff for how quickly you can do it. So it's going to be one of those games where you just repeat over and over and over again until you master it frame by frame and get an A plus rating right across the board, and that's going to be extremely satisfying for me to play. It's also a good one for, even if you've got no interest in like retro games or the 8-bit era in particular, it's the sort of game I saw a lot of people when NES Remix coming out saying that it helped them appreciate those games more. Because when you play those games nowadays with no context or anything, a lot of them don't age that great. But when things like this break down specific mechanics and make you play those mechanics enough until you learn the ins and outs of them, and you go actually go, oh, actually that's good now. I kind of understand how you kill enemies in Balloon Fight, and now I've learned how to master it and stuff like that. I would say anyone who doesn't care about retro should maybe give us a chance as well, because I think it might open your eyes a bit. How amazingly designed these games were, that you can break down each component of them and turn each one into a challenge. I think I'm really excited about it. Very much.
I love it when they do stuff like this. It's so un-Nintendo, but it's also very Nintendo to just randomly be like, we're doing this now.
Yeah,
like,
it's brilliant. And I love the NES Remix games, which by all accounts are the same thing. I'm also excited that it's called Nintendo World Championships NES Edition, which implies they're going to do the same with Super Nintendo games, and there was never a SNES Remix, so I'm hoping that it goes that far.
What's the fancy version that I see people are flocking to?
So there's two. There's one in the West, which comes with a gold cartridge, which for like proper nerds is the more exciting of the two, because basically the Nintendo World Championships were held in the 90s, and it was like a US tournament, and the finalists were given a grey cartridge with a Nintendo World Championship. Basically the cartridge they used for the competition, they just took it out of the machine and said, here. And then they took it up the road with them. And the winners got a gold cartridge. And the grey cartridges are worth like $14,000 nowadays. And the gold cartridges are worth like $60,000-$70,000. Like, name your price, basically, the gold cartridges. So you're getting a replica of a gold cartridge, but with NES edition on it, so nobody tries to sell it as a new one. And with a wee stand, so you can stand it up in your room somewhere. And then art cards with the game's box art on it. And then in Japan, you're getting art cards, but with the Famicom and Famicom Disk System art, and then two Famicom Switch controllers designed to look like the Famicom controllers. But that's kind of less exciting, because you could always get them in Japan if you were a Club Nintendo member. And apparently they're going on sale the same day to the public in Japan, those controllers separately. So I think when I'm in Japan, I'll pick them up anyway, just separately. So I'll probably end up buying the UK deluxe set and then just buying the controllers and then job done. But it's really exciting. As someone who like obviously is a big retro nerd, I'm always happy when I see these games re-released in like Switch Online and stuff, but I've played them a million times. It's always exciting to see them presented in a different way that kind of makes you play them in a different way, so I'm well up for this.
Just finally, before we go for a break and get Chris Dring in here, Media Molecule co-founder Mark Healy, who left the studio last year, you might remember, spoke to Ben Hansen on MinMax and said that Media Molecule's next game is more of a game than a creative tool, from what he understands about it. Chris, I think this is the move they had to make if they wanted to continue as a studio. The creative tools are amazing, but they weren't paying the bills.
Yeah, I'm hoping to go back to a little big planet type situation where it's mainly a game. Well, there will be a creative element to it, because he says more of a game than a creative tool, which suggests to me he's not saying it's 100% game. It sounds like he's saying there will be creative elements to it, but the game will take precedent, as opposed to Dreams, which was 95% creation.
Yeah.
It sounds like this will be another little big planet situation where there's a game there first and foremost, and then you can customize and share all your creations after it. Which, yeah, I agree that that's the way to go if you want to kind of get the most people involved in it. Because Dreams, as fantastic as Dreams was, it was a very niche product, because not everyone wants to create stuff in their games. It should, if you're going to sell the most copies, then the creation aspect should be a part of it rather than the whole underlying focus. Unless you're Minecraft, in which case, never mind. But yeah, so that's the right way to go. I'm looking forward to seeing what it is. I wonder if it even is, it's going to be a little big planet game.
I would love that. I think it's time. I think they could totally get away with doing, don't call it 4 or whatever, just call it Little Big Planet. Like, there's
Little
no
Big Planet
reason.
Universe or something like that. Yeah. Little Big Planet Infinity until the servers shut down. But yeah, something like that. I'd be well up for that. Get Sack back and Crackboy all in. We'll start
the political campaign soon enough. Chris, if you are departing us now, do you have any final words?
Just be nice to each other. Just talking as if it's my final podcast ever. it's been a week, and on both sides, like the Sony stuff is pretty toxic. The Microsoft stuff is even more toxic. It's just like, obviously people lose their jobs. It's like, it's grim beyond belief, especially when those people are performing to a level that just like, until recently Microsoft was trumpeting them as one of the greatest like modern recent accomplishments they had was Hi-Fi Rush, and then suddenly these people are all getting punted, and it's like, it's just grim. So when you go online and see people celebrating it, it's just like, get a grip. Like, everyone should be at the risk of turning this into a WCW situation. Even the most hardcore PlayStation fans should want to see Xbox doing well, because
especially when they're putting Xbox games on PlayStation.
Exactly. And especially because if Xbox is ever out, if Microsoft ever says, right, we're done with games, this, you're doing us more harm than good now, this will be the last Xbox, let's slowly draw a line under it. Even if they do Sega and say, right, we're just going to start making games for other systems now and not make any more consoles, that's bad news, because Nintendo's in a kind of world of its own. Sony would essentially have no competition in its field. And that's when, if you think Sony drops the ball a lot just now, they're with no competition, they basically write the rules at that point. And
iPad 2, let's get the cell architecture back.
They'll add copies of Buzz and SingStar. With every...
Buzz was ahead of its time.
It was good. I never kind of warmed to the mascot, no. but I appreciate the effort. They're going to. You always want competition, because you always want each company to push each other to create new things. When there's only one game in town, there's less requirement to kind of push the boundaries, and you don't want that. So nobody should be celebrating what's going on at Xbox just now. First and foremost because of the job losses, but then as an overall picture, you don't want to see the industry becoming stagnant if one of the big players leaves and the other one's given free rein to basically write the rules. Hopefully this gets resolved and the remaining studios, Microsoft takes this as a lesson that it can't just keep messing about like this, and somebody, whether that's management getting a shake or something, there needs to be a proper rethink of how they're doing it, because we've spoken in the past about how they've messed up advertising Game Pass. Like, so many people still don't know about Game Pass. The way they're handling their studios is ridiculous. The acquisition of Activision seemed like a good idea at the time, but if it's going to make every other studio look bad by comparison, as one of our kind of opinion pieces on the site yesterday said, that's a bad move in the grand scheme of things. A lot of inward looking has to be done now, and they need to say, we need to turn this around, because otherwise they're going down a hill here and they need to kind of hit the brakes. I think.
Okie doke, we'll be back after this.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
And we are back. One Chris down, one Chris returns. I have Chris Dring from GI.biz. How are you, man?
I'm doing all right. It's been a busy busy week.
Yeah.
with everything that's going on in the games industry. I was expecting it to be quiet until like that Summer Games Fest sort of period. But no, here we go.
Never ever stop.
Stuff's happening.
Most importantly though, as we were just mentioning, Doctor Who's back at the weekend. As the biggest Doctor Who man I know, how are you feeling about it?
I'm pretty excited. I'm a little bit apprehensive. I didn't love the Christmas special. I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it. I did like the what David Tennant specials they did. So but also Stephen Moffat's back as a writer, and he's doing episode 3. So not this weekend, it'll be the weekend after. They're doing 2 episodes this weekend. So I'm quite excited, yeah. We'll see. It's been Disney'd a bit, isn't it? So yeah. We'll find out.
I'm as excited about it now as I was maybe when Matt Smith debuted. That was like I like David Tennant. Matt Smith's my favorite ever. I dropped off for a while and then would come back now and again. I find it hard to watch the Peter Capaldi stuff because I'm such a thick of it fan. It's just like, that's not you, that's Malcolm Tucker.
He's quite Malcolm Tucker-esque. It's quite dark, the Capaldi era. It's like when they try to sort of go up against Game of Thrones in a way. So it's a lot of one series ends with the idea that when you die, your ghost feels the pain of your body. So if you're getting cremated, you hear a scream. One bit, you hear someone screaming, and he goes, oh, there's another cremation. I'm like, this is a kid's show.
It's a far cry from the Absorbaloth and the
Exactly. But I quite like the Capaldi stuff. There's some amazing episodes in it, but it's super dark. My excitement for it has been the Jodie Whittaker era. Nothing to do with Jodie or anything like that, but it was pretty rubbish. I'm hoping for a comeback. We'll see. I like the look of this Doctor and
everything. Oh yeah, Shuti's fantastic. Yeah. Another good Scottish boy. Funnily enough, Stephen Moffat went to school with my dad, and his parents either still do, if they're still with us, live 2 minutes down the road from where I'm sat right now.
Stephen Moffat's wife, who produces a lot of shows and stuff, is also on the board of the National Film and Television School and does a lot of stuff in video games. There we are. He's a big Tomb Raider fan, Stephen Moffat. There we are.
Get him on the show.
Shall we get him on?
Yeah. Okay, doke. Let's get into it. Xbox is closing down 4 Bethesda studios, including Arkane, Austin, Hi-Fi Rush Studio, Tango Gameworks, and 2 others. This news broke on Tuesday following an internal email. This, Chris, came as pretty severe shock to most of the games industry. What was your first reaction when this started to break?
It was a little sooner than I expected. The financials that Xbox put out, was it last week? Relatively recently. Were not great. So the Activision Blizzard numbers made it look good, but if you just factored those out, you saw Xbox really, really not growing. So we know that Game Pass isn't growing significantly. Their console business is down 30%. And I look at the games last year, and Forza Motorsport didn't really do anything. Redfall didn't do anything. Hi-Fi Rush was a great game, but it didn't do anything. Starfield seems... I don't think Starfield was a disaster, but it certainly didn't... in the level that I think people were expecting. So it was a rough year, and it felt inevitable, that at some point Xbox is pivoting already. We saw the announcement back in January, I think, which was quite, it feels like a significant moment when they announced those games were coming to PlayStation and Nintendo. I don't think those were, I don't think those were the biggest games in the world, obviously, but I still think it felt like a moment. And so, you know, the business was shifting a little bit, and that change doesn't tend to be good. Phil Spencer has spoken extensively about the lack of growth in the games industry. Growth is what Microsoft's all about. And so you felt that there was more to come. They obviously cut a load of Activision Blizzard stuff earlier in the year. But I'll be honest, it happened faster than I had anticipated it would. I guess some of those studios would have been right at the start of the development of their next projects. So it probably made sense. But it's obviously depressing. These are great studios. Redfall missed, but that doesn't make them a bad studio. And it's always sad when talented teams that work together for a long time that, yeah, I think they were sort of at the start, you know, they're basically at the start of pitching their, you know, working on their next projects. So it probably made sense to close them at this point if they were going to do that. But it still caught me by surprise. I didn't think we were, it was going to happen that soon after the last round of cuts.
Yeah, it's weird because now Bloomberg reports that Arkane Austin was pitching an immersive sim. Obviously, they're known for Prey. They helped on some of like the main Arkane Leon team's sim stuff, and that Tango was looking to do another Hi-Fi Rush game. So to me, it feels the Hi-Fi Rush stuff and Tango specifically feels very counter to the entire point of Game Pass. Wasn't Game Pass's entire pitch that games like Hi-Fi could exist because you're not relying on box sales? That's getting lifted up by other stuff.
The Game Pass dream, I'm not going to say it's over, but it's not. When it was originally pitched, Microsoft's dream for this was to have like hundreds of millions of people subscribing to a service, and that sheer quantity of people was going to make the whole thing. But it kind of, it's got to about what, 30 million, and it isn't growing anymore. There is, to be fair, Pete, a lot of third party companies were saying this at the time, like how many games do most people play a year? And does it make sense to subscribe to that many? And now it's like, what's going to move the needle for Game Pass? It's big games. Then pivoting towards third-party publishing in a way, releasing games on more platforms. And in order to really make the most of that, you need big games. I know what you're saying, but I do feel that I think kind of, Game Pass isn't quite the be-all and end-all now for Microsoft because it hasn't turned out the way they thought it was going to. They took a idea that in the future we'd all be subscribing to games, or at least a lot of us would be, and that hasn't come to pass. It's obviously still a lucrative model and it makes loads of money, but and you have to ask, you know, did Hi-Fi Rush? You just look at some of the stuff they did with Game Pass last year with Starfield, where you had the early access thing, right? So they're trying to monetize these games more through Game Pass. You got the microtransaction games like Sea of Thieves and stuff. Hi-Fi Rush, Redfall, Immersive Sims, these sort of 10, 15-hour games are harder to monetize outside of just people who subscribe to it. Also, you look at the charts, there was this idea that Game Pass was boosting sales of new games, and that might be true for a third-party publisher who've got games on other platforms. But in the Europe, Starfield charted outside of the top 30. Forza, Hi-Fi Rush, and Redfall charted outside of the top 200. Like, these games didn't make any money as standalone releases, really. So, they're hard to monetize outside of that, some of these games. So you've got this situation where Game Pass hasn't turned out to be the dream. It has stalled. Slow down. I also think one of the things I think Microsoft's got an issue with, and it's they do this wonderful thing when they acquire a company. It's called the limited integration strategy. And what they mean by that is they basically let the company be the company. You do what you like, you know, there will be hands off, we'll come in and help you if you need, but you don't even need a Microsoft email address. You can be whatever you want to be. It's how they approach the acquisition of Minecraft and Mojang. And that worked. And it's how they approach LinkedIn, and that worked. But you sort of, when you see, they've had these studios for quite some time and they're not really delivering anything big. And I think at some point you sort of go, you know what, we don't need that. What's that Ninja Theory game that no one bought they bought it? So probably have maybe put a bit more effort into getting Hellblade out earlier, or do we really need Obsidian doing Pentiment? These games are amazing and obviously glad that they exist. But I think Microsoft needed some bigger games. right from the Xbox Series S and X, and also through Game Pass, and they just haven't had it. And you look at the, you know, you look at these. I read the piece on VGC, which talked about Microsoft's now got these mega titles, and that's where, in order to deliver growth, they need more mega titles, and that's kind of true. That doesn't mean they won't make smaller niche titles. You know, EA have FIFA, but they still do Dead Space remakes. You know, Ubisoft have Assassin's Creed, but they still do a 2D Prince of Persia game. You still get these big companies, they still do sort of these what are called prestige titles. But Microsoft has a lot of studios making it, and these games, and they, you know, they'll look at the Fallout 4 was the best-selling game in Europe across in April. And you sort of go, everyone's like, they need to do another Fallout. And this is where and Microsoft will know that. That's where they need to be investing their money, not in an immersive sim. But if the numbers were going up, if the industry was doing better, if Game Pass subscribers were growing, I don't think these studios would have been closed. Mm. Microsoft would have been happy to keep them going, you know. But what matters now is whether or not, for Microsoft, it's all about growing. If these studios are not helping them grow, if they're not, then they might want to invest in other areas. It's really depressing. It's just public companies and capitalism and all that
depressing.
Shit.
So where does this leave the likes of your Ninja Theory, of your Double Fine, of these studios that make games that people love, but like Psychonauts 2 didn't, like, it set the critics on fire and the fans on fire, but didn't set sales on fire. Hellblade 2, there's a lot of chat about how that game has basically not been marketed at all and is out in about 10 days. Surely the morale there must be absolute rock bottom.
So that's a good question, because those games do fit into the mold of the sort of games that you'd get from Arkane or Tango. Microsoft don't actually market their games very much anymore. Game Pass is basically their marketing vehicle. Mm. The way their business works internally is first party games, they go, right, well, how much money are we going to make out of this game? And if we spend this amount on marketing, how much more money are we going to make? If so many people are getting that game through the subscription service, they're not actually going to make that much money on it. So therefore you don't get much marketing. And that sort of, but Game Pass in itself becomes its own marketing vehicle, because millions of people get to play it, and then it, you know, goes up on Twitch and YouTube and spreads out through word of mouth. So in many ways, that is the marketing vehicle for Hellblade. Hellblade has a sort of, it'd be interesting to see what they've done with it, because I guess it has the power to be a PlayStation-esque sort of game, and those games can do really well. And then you have to remember that they bought Ninja Theory for these games, and they bought Double Fine for those games. When they bought Bethesda, and they spent $7.5 billion on Bethesda, they weren't buying it for The Evil Within and Dishonored. They were buying it for Elder Scrolls. They were buying it for Fallout. And they will want those Bethesda teams to be really focused on those IP and Doom and those sort of brands, rather than Indiana Jones, rather than necessarily these other things. What I've always been a bit funny with is I never quite understand why, if that is the aim, because this is what's alluded to in Matt Booty's email. If the aim is, we want to put our money onto Fallout and put our focus onto Fallout, couldn't Tango Gameworks or someone, could they work on those titles? Microsoft so hands-off that they not even entertain that idea? Because Activision would do it. Mm. Activision would put Toys for Bob on a Crash Bandicoot remaster after Skylanders, because, you know, they needed someone to do it. I just wondered if, you know, they've got so much IP now, Microsoft. Couldn't, you know, I bet Tango could do a great Tony Hawk's, right? And sure, the developers may not want to work on those things, but it's better than closing them, surely. I don't know. There's another element of this, which is that these games you mentioned earlier, and I've got a better answer to the question you asked earlier, which is around these games wasn't at the promise of Game Pass. Yes, but actually a lot of those games they can just sign. Mm. You know, they don't need to make them themselves. They can go to a third party, they can go to a publisher and developer and go, oh, you've got a game like that, we can sign that and put that into Game Pass, and they can then put their money into whatever, Call of Duty or Halo or whatever those. And that's the thing, you've got Microsoft's lineup of games now, look at Minecraft and Warcraft and Diablo, and those titles are massive,
yeah,
right, absolutely massive. And a game like Dishonored 3 or whatever it is they're working on, Hi-Fi Rush, it's just a different scale, on a completely different scale. But it's I think what's sad about it, in a way, what makes me a little cross with Microsoft is that they are kind of responsible for a lot of this. You know, we live in a I've always been a little bit sympathetic to those companies that overspent during the pandemic, because if your competitors are doing it, you're kind of obligated to do it too. So if your competitors are paying more wages to their staff, you're going to have to do it, or your talent might leave and go to that studio. If you're making a real-time strategy game and your competitive real-time strategy game is investing loads of money and making it super AAA, then you're going to have to try and do the same thing to keep up. So that creates a situation where people do things out of necessity, not just because they want to spend loads of money. But Microsoft didn't do it for that reason. Microsoft wasn't spending billions. They were doing it because they believed they wanted to transform the industry, and they had this big promise. And the promise isn't paid out. I did a slightly spicy tweet where I said that they're basically American Embracer at this point. Mm. But there's a sort of truth to it in that they spent a lot of money in chasing a vision that just didn't come to pass. And now it's the teams that are paying the price.
Yeah. I wanted to speak to you about basically the timing of this, and the fact that we are, as we sit here, a month to the day, I believe, from them getting on a live stream and talking about what's next and doing the "we hear you, we listen, we love our gamers, our fans, and our studios." How do they message this? There has been no official word from anyone at Xbox following this. There has been more posts about new controllers than there has been official word about these closures. So how do they square that with the "we're your friend, we're the executive sitting down on the couch having a beer with you"?
Yeah, there is a weird challenge. I think the BAFTAs did it quite well. I always think when I went to the GDC awards and it became sort of the overarching theme of the event, that wasn't good. The BAFTAs sort of came up front and addressed it at the start. I can imagine that the actual, I'm imagining when it might be in person. I suspect you might get Phil Spencer on stage in person, sort of talking about it to the room. I don't know if you'd get that on a live stream. Here's the thing with this Xbox stream in June. I do wonder if, obviously they always have multi-platform games in it, but I do wonder if this is going to be an Xbox stream where most of the games on it are coming to other platforms.
Mm.
And it just means that it's such a, I don't know. I can. There's a lot of noise around it at the minute. This news, but I do wonder if it sort of reached into the wider wider corners of the game. I can't remember what it was like last year, because was it just a stream of trailers?
Yeah, it was streams of trailers linked with kind of pieces to camera last year. But surely, if their entire winning back of the hearts and minds has been, "we are gamers, we are with you, Phil has like 9 million achievement points," like, this can't be ignored, surely.
Yeah, it's a difficult, I'll be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if they just put it out as a stream of trailers and give it, let the creators do the talking. And nobody wants to hear from Phil at the minute. honesty about it. It is a thing. It's interesting because I speak to Phil Spencer down the years many times, and even Lars at Embracer. These two people are some of the most game-centric execs I've ever spoken to. Like, they're games people. They're not, you know, they really love... I love Strauss Zelnick. He's a very nice man, but I can tell you he's never played a video game. But whereas, you know Phil does. Phil's put a ridiculous amount of hours into Starfield. I have no idea how he has time. And Lars has like the biggest collection of retro games that you can imagine. He's just really into that. So in a way, it feels, as when you're giving execs kicking, they're the ones you don't want to give a kicking to, because you feel like they're one of us. But they're stuck in that they are still ultimately answerable to shareholders. And they're answerable to, and those shareholders wanted to see growth, and they pitched a big growth strategy, and it just hasn't paid off, and it's on them. But they didn't work out, that they overplayed their hand. I don't know what my point is I'm trying to make.
I do get you. Like, it's weird because on the one hand, the character of Phil Spencer, never spoke to the man, don't know him personally at all. He comes across very personable, but you always have to remember he is this executive, this incredibly rich guy. Like, I just feel that the goodwill that they earned from having their top brass being so public, out on Twitter, following all these fan accounts, engaging with fan accounts that they should not be engaging with because it includes some of the worst parts of the community, I feel like now that even those people have turned on them, where do they sit? Like, surely that strategy has to be all but abandoned.
in a way, you think about it, part of it's linked to the console war thing, right? It's about that, you know, I love my console is everything. And now with Xbox going, yeah, we're going to stick a load of the games on PlayStation. It's almost this, it is almost like a middle finger to that group. And they are, you know, resentful and angry about it, unnecessarily.
Yeah.
But can I be honest? I think Xbox need to stop talking.
Yeah.
Like, they do a lot of talking and they don't do enough delivering. They do deliver great games, as, you know, before someone on Twitter shouts at me. They don't do enough of it. For years they've been telling us they're going to change the industry and they're going to sort out the quality of their games. Well, we're sorting out the quality of our games, and Forza Motorsport is one of the dullest things I've ever played, right? And it's and Redfall's a bit shit and Starfield was all right. Right, anyway, so I'm like, it's come on, like, get it together. Stop telling us you're going to do it and just start doing it. I believe that's coming. By the way, I look at their lineup and I think these games look great. I'm excited to play them. And it might just be a case of now, you know, but yeah, keep your head down and start putting out some of that stuff that you've been promising you do.
My worry is that now that we've spent years and years and years getting them into this position of the trickle becomes a stream, like, we get games, the old joke about the dominoes are going to fall and all these games are going to come out, it will stop being a joke, hopefully. By the time we get there, if these games aren't firing, does Xbox just become a label for Activision Blizzard stuff? Like,
well, here's the thing. Actually, you know what? When they went to buy Activision Blizzard in many ways is actually a bigger and more powerful games company than Microsoft is. and they get their games out on time. The quality is not always great, but generally it's pretty good. Microsoft games are often late. You sit there and think, should Activision Blizzard's dev management team be the ones making sure, you know, working on some of these Microsoft IP that are sort of faltering? Call of Duty remained as strong and as powerful as it did 10 years ago. Halo is like half the monster it once was. So you start wondering if Microsoft should be run by the Activision Blizzard team, even though that would be terrifying, I guess, for the employees. The thing is, the fear for Microsoft is that games isn't that big a deal for them. Right, it isn't really, and they see it as a growth opportunity. They see it as an exciting opportunity for them. But the moment it stops becoming that, Microsoft goes, "Yeah, no, we don't need this." That's the biggest thing, you know. And they're not afraid to, you know, it's what happened with Nokia and stuff. They're not afraid to suddenly go knock stuff on the head when it's not working. And Xbox, you could argue, hasn't been working. Yes, it's made revenue growth, but it hasn't really been working since the Xbox One came out. And this was their big play, and it isn't coming out. I hope it isn't. The thing is, Microsoft was always talking about changing the games industry. They're talking about making more games to attract new audiences, new ways of paying for these games, new places of playing these games. Like, they're always talking about trying to change the industry for the better. And I actually believe them when they say that, and the plans they have, whether you're confident in them or not, you know, they were certainly ambitious. And I hope that they're not giving up on that entirely. And we're not just going to see Call of Duty, Gears of War, Halo, Diablo, you know, Minecraft just on repeat for the next decade. I look at their lineup now and it's cool and it's exciting. I just hope that the next games that they commission in Greenlight are going to have a similar sort of slate.
Okay, before we get out of here, any final thoughts on this? I'm really... And it's very disheartening. It's been a disheartening week, a disheartening year, a disheartening 3 years in this industry.
Yeah, it is. Here's the thing. I will say this. Since, obviously, on Games and Shoppers, we write a lot about what's going on in the market. And the first 2 months of the year, I don't think we wrote a positive story. When GDC started to kick in, we started writing more about studios opening, new investment happening, new funds starting up. It's not the heyday. But there were some positive stories amongst the layoffs, and that's still happening now. We're still reporting on studios setting up. I think there's a story breaking quite soon about another AAA studio setting up by another group of people that's quite exciting. They're still happening. If you look at the sales that's happening in video games, console market is in collapse. So if you console hardware sales are doing really, really down, but game sales are surprisingly robust. You know, in a quarter where there wasn't Hogwarts, Helldivers 2, Power World. Was it Balatia, whatever that that card game is? We're seeing hits.
Balatro?
Yeah, well, game so yeah, that's what I'm trying. I've not played it.
Oh, mate, as soon as you play, your life will be over. It's unbelievable.
but there's been like successes, quite a few successes in the games industry. New IP, gamers are spending money and they're buying games. The market is broadly up. You know, we're in this real doldrum. There's not a lot coming out. It looks like Switch 2's next year and GTA 6 is next year. And it's like a lot of the big games are a little further out. But the market hadn't collapsed like we thought it was going to at the start of the year. There is some positive stories out there. Some studios are starting up. Some investment is happening in games. It wasn't happening in January and February. It is happening now. So we're still going to see more of these stories. We're still going to see cuts and depressing stories out in the games industry. But there's some positive ones out there as well. And I am more confident than I was 2 months ago that we will start to see a turnaround in the next 6 months. but there we are. I end on a positive.
I believe I recently spoke to the people that you were alluding to, and it is exciting. There is still glimmers out there of stuff happening. It's not the heyday of in 2020 when you could sneeze and you could get, like, if you were like an art director at Riot.
We're not in that world. Studio, companies are having to work harder. There's a lot of studios that are struggling for investment. Like, I don't want to downplay how hard it still is out there. It's just that this isn't an industry in collapse. It's going for an extremely painful. Look, the games industry's always done this. It's always gone bigger. It's always boomed a little bit too far and it had to contract a little bit. It's done that throughout the entire history of it. It's just that in this situation, the growth was so extreme, the decline is equally as extreme. And it's painful and horrible and people are losing their jobs and it's just awful. But it will bounce back.
That's a nice note to end on. As we currently record, it has just turned 2 o'clock, so I checked Twitter to see if that Sony showcase has been announced yet, but not yet. I'm sure we'll be talking about that sooner rather than later.
Yeah,
you heading out to SGF, Chris?
I hear you're going to be out there.
We'll be there.
GI's doing a bunch of stuff. We're actually doing a panel at IGN Live, which is.
Could you get me in? You know,
there's a lot of I'm looking forward to it. I went last year and it was great. It's really great. It's not E3. It's nowhere near that. Yeah. But it is still fun.
No Kenshiro Hall. No weird
things
controllers.
With E3 is it's so, such a Hollywood thing, right? You know Keanu Reeves. No, it's not that. It's a bunch of games in a back alley, and I'm not even joking. In LA.
Yeah. Well, I've been invited to see Slash
you?
Perform
oh,
while
wow.
I'm out there, so there's
What's
still a bit
the,
of
why
that,
have I not
that
been
glitz
invited
and glam.
To see
Mate, from my BBC time, I'm on some weird press lists. I got invited to a convention of the National Rifle Association, so it's all going.
All right. Yeah.
So I'll see you there if you happen to be at the NRA convention. And you can send any questions, comments, or concerns to podcast@videogameschronicle.com. Thank you for listening. You can follow us on Twitter @JordanMidler for me, and you can follow Chris at Chris_Dring. I thought it was that, but I thought I would double check in case I sent someone to something horrific, which is all Twitter is these days.
I've changed my Twitter account now. I only ever see I've got two columns on my and it's like I can see people who have added me and I can see my direct messages. And I can't see any. I don't want anyone else's opinions anymore. It's like I don't want it. And it's off my phone, so I only ever see it at work. So because it starts to creep into your personal life, it completely had done for a bit. So I've sort of.
Well, when I put out a video later on of that clip of you saying that Xbox should start making some fucking games and stop talking, I'm sure you'll have plenty of ats. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Grant Kirkhope for the VGC podcast theme. We will see you next week. Say goodbye, Chris. Goodbye for Chris Scullion, who is no longer with us, gone but not forgotten. And we'll see you next time.
Sorry.
VGC, a video games podcast, is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.